Let's get underway with today's lesson. This is the church, its names and authority. I think everybody has a copy of the material. He mentions, as far as that beginning paragraph, just a couple of sentences. He says, in our state of religious confusion. You think our world's in a state of religious confusion? It is. I'll mention today, as far as Islam, that encompasses about 25% of the population of our society. That's worldwide. That's a lot of folks. But there's confusion when you think about Islam. Some people say it's a peaceful religion. Other people say it's a violent religion. You've got the so-called Christian section of the world. That, of course, includes a lot of different things in the minds of people. And even within the various religious groups, people look at that group and say, well, you've got this faction and that faction. And then the outsiders, they really don't know what to think. So there is a great deal of religious confusion. Part of that, when we think about Christianity, involves the nature of the church. Thinking about that in practical terms, how do you see confusion when it comes to the nature of the church today? What are people confused about?
Marriage.
All right, that's going to be one issue. You find there are at least 8 common positions on divorce and remarriage that we can find in the church today. We studied that a while back, but you do find divisions on that. What else? The nature of the church.
Baptism.
All right, you're going to find people, some sprinkle, some pour, some dip. Some say it's to join the church. Others teach, we would say rightly, it's for the forgiveness of sins. Do you sprinkle infants or pour water on them? So again, there are 6 or 8 different paths there that people go. Doug, and then I'll come back to you, Glenda.
Most don't know that the kingdom is here.
Okay, sure. That's going to be another big issue. A lot of people think the kingdom is still out there in the future, and that gets into the nation of Israel and all kinds of wild ideas, a rapture and tribulation on earth and all kinds of things. And even within the various premillennial schools of thought, once again, you've got division, post-tribulation, pre-tribulation, and they break it down into a lot of different areas. And just that section, that's a major division as far as Christian thought. And it's a problem in the church. You've got 70 AD, that Christ came in, 70 AD, those kinds of things, and just some really wild stuff. Glenda?
I was going to ask, do you mean like next door at Brennan, or do you mean unity within the churches of Christ?
Well, I think when we talk about the nature of the church, you could look at that from both perspectives.
Okay, praise choirs or something like that.
All right, you're going to have that problem as well. So you've got, in a lot of different categories, several issues and sometimes even divisions within those issues.
The Lord's Supper, but that's not anything relatively new that's been going on for a long time.
It has. You've got the Lutheran view, you've got the Catholic view, and then you've got how often do you take it, can you switch the elements around. So again, that's just a single area, but you still find at least 4 or 5 divisions. Glenda, back to you. All right, you find people who have different beliefs about the building. You've got some people out there in the denominational world, they believe that it is a holy place. Other people, we've got some brethren in the church that are not comfortable eating in the building. Other people want to turn it into a big entertainment center like a YMCA. So again, you've got a stretch of people there that have different ideas when it comes to Christianity. What else? Stan and Brian?
Throughout the religious world, there's a clerical laity.
Yes. You do have that as well. There's the hierarchy. Sometimes it's more in a localized sense. With the Amish, I think that you would see that more locally. You've got the bishop and so forth. But then you've got the groups. You think about Catholicism. That may be the most prominent example. The Pope and everything kind of flows down from him. And, it's like being the CEO of a major corporation. So when it comes to church government, again, major divisions there as far as the thought and the way it works.
And the church finances. Should the church have a treasury? If so,
okay.
Funds be used.
Yeah. And that, again, takes on a whole new thing. Some congregations are big on special collections. Other congregations would say, we're not going to ever take any money except if it's on Sunday. You've got some congregations. Some of the stuff is newer and just hasn't been thought through. But what if we had an ATM machine in the foyer? You think some people would freak out about that? Well, I think some people, just because we've never seen it or experienced it, I don't know that you could make a case against it. What if we said, okay, Brian and I and probably a couple others, anybody ever heard of Square? It's a mobile payment app. You can go ahead and take somebody's credit card and slide it through a little reader, or you can actually punch in the numbers, do that kind of thing. What if we said, okay, we're going to set things up in an orderly way where we're going to take Square. You can actually charge your contribution this week. Now, we get dinged a little bit on that, But let's say that we want to do that. There are actually some congregations that take credit cards. Now, that's not going to go over very well in every place, but there are some congregations, probably in some larger cities, that are on board with that, and that works. Or what about online giving? There's some congregations that are doing that as well. Could you give your contribution online? You know, that's been a big problem for some congregations. What if I want to after we get home or before we leave in the morning? So you have these questions come up, and a lot of times before they're resolved, people come up with some more questions. So there are significant numbers of differences, a lot of differences, but again, going back to the Bible each time and trying to sort through those, and that's again where we get back to authority. You know, what do we have authority for? Examples, commands, and inference. And if you're not using the right authority and trying to work through that in the right way, it can lead to some serious issues. Bonnie?
Duties of women.
Okay. Again, that's going to be a whole separate category, but it is just huge. And as I said earlier, some congregations, they've gone this far. Other congregations have gone to the point of almost having ladies in the eldership. I think probably in the past a couple have. You've got questions that people raise about deaconesses. You know, can we have, and I go back to Phoebe, the church in Sincrea, or she's from Sincrea, Romans chapter 16. She is called a servant of the church. But
there is another issue that some people believe that, if it's all right, I'll just use a specific example that we have right here, that Michael has been baptized. And so some people think that it's not okay for a woman to teach that class, but some people think that it is okay for a woman to teach that class since he has been baptized. That's an issue that, you know, it comes up in the church.
Yeah, it's a question. Well,
I don't know if there's people here that think that's okay, but I've heard of it before.
Yeah. Where our kids attend, the preacher down there has a series which he calls the Hot Potato Series. I'm not sure exactly why he named it that. There may have been some other answers, but he tries to take on some questions like that. And I talked to him about a year ago when we were down there on the way to Fried Hardeman and asked him how that was going, and he seemed to think it went really well. But he said, I'll not preach a sermon from the questions that are submitted unless I can have a text. So, I mean, if you've been preaching for a while, you can probably make that work. But it was suggested to me, we'll see if this gets brought up at a business meeting, but it was suggested to me that maybe we consider on the potluck Sundays that we have doing some hot potato questions. Now, that might not be difficult for you. That kind of puts me in the hot seat. But that's okay. You know, we're trying to give Bible answers to some questions, but not... You know, you don't want in those situations somebody trying to attack somebody for their beliefs. You know, for example, I remember Guyon Woods. He was someone, a few of you have probably heard him, read some of his books and so forth. He was an old preacher. And I remember one time I had a chance to meet up with him and talk with him in Smithville, Tennessee. And he said that as he went out and preached, he'd leave some time in some of his meetings for questions and answers. Well, that's nice. You know, maybe a local preacher hasn't been able to answer something or didn't cover that for a while. But he also made the point. He said sometimes in, you know, trying to respond to the questions that people have, Joe was trying to attack Sue. What do you think of smoking? You know, what do you think of drinking? Well, you know, you always got to make sure you've got the right spirit. You know, you're not, and I think he did a lot of good work there as far as sincerity. But there are a lot of questions that people have, sometimes in the church, sometimes outside the church, sometimes outside the quote-unquote Christian faith. Well, he mentions, continuing with that sentence, the nature of the church mentioned in the New Testament is apt to be obscured. And that's right. People can get so caught up with the premillennial stuff or the end of time stuff or some other things that they don't get the basic truth of the gospel. And that's a problem. So sometimes, and you'll find this in a Bible study, somebody comes to the door, Jehovah's Witnesses, for example. Let's talk about the book of Revelation. Let's go over to the book of Ezekiel. Well, okay, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. But if there's an afterlife, doesn't it make sense to get that squared away first? Let's go ahead and get the basics down, and then we can try to sort through Ezekiel or Revelation or Daniel or Zechariah or some of the other difficult books, New Testament or Old. So we want to make sure that we've got the basic facts down. And that's really the purpose of this course, to get people to a point where they've got a good foundation, Old Testament and New, good working knowledge of the Bible, information about worship, salvation, heaven, hell, those kinds of things. Thus it says, in this and the following two lessons, we shall seek to discover what the primitive church was like. Anybody read through the latest Voice of Truth yet? It's a little yellow edition. I just finished it. I can't remember offhand who the author was, but he put out a sign, which I think I'm going to, when the snow clears out a little bit more, put on our sign as well. We've often heard people describe the church as non-denominational. Well, that's not bad. I had a teacher one time say that we're anti-denominational. I think that's better. But the fella in the Voice of Truth article said we are the pre-denominational church. Now, I like that. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, we're anti-denominational, we're opposed to it. We're non-denominational, but a lot of people have kind of picked that up and, hijacked that term. But we are pre-denominational. We want to go back and be the primitive church. So that's the message that we're trying to communicate with people. So if you've never read through that publication, if you don't have this one, that's something that I think might be good to bear in mind. Then he says, final sentence, our concern is not with present-day denominations, but with the divine body described in the Bible. If you have to, choose between six rotten apples, does it really matter which one you pick? I mean, they're all rotten. And if you're thinking about a religious group, somebody says, and we've actually had to deal with this in my family, there are four close religious groups to us, and which one should we pick? Well, none of them are trying to be the primitive church of the Bible. So what do you tell somebody in that situation? They're all bad apples. Now, you might... Yeah, and that's pretty much what it comes down to. So in this situation, it's we like the people over here, so that's going to be the group that we follow. Well, that's not the Bible criteria. You may have to worship at home if you want to be the primitive church of the Bible. You might just have, you and a family member or two, but still, we want to go back and make sure that we are the church of the New Testament. Okay, any other thoughts before we pick up with the next section? Okay, thinking about the names of the church. He mentions correctly, all things have names. How valuable, how significant are names? They are very significant. How would you illustrate that to somebody if you're talking with them?
You.
Well, okay. You find some people, you refer to your wife in that way, and I have a name. And this is it. Hey, you's probably not going to cut it. So in family relationships, it's true there. How else? The importance of names.
When I married Judy, I prefer her to use my last name than somebody else's last name.
Yes, and that's exactly right. People would say, well, that's strange. What's going on? But when we think about married relationships, names are important. What else?
Reputation.
All right. People will protect that name. They'll protect the brand name. You see that. The story that came out a couple of weeks ago, Alan Dershowitz, he's that famous lawyer. Who was he drug into a potential lawsuit with? Anybody remember? It was somebody famous like that. I don't remember the exact character. I'd have to go back and review that a little bit. But Dershowitz, the name comes up connected to Dershowitz, and he essentially says, I'll see you in court. If you're going to try to tarnish my reputation, I'm going to come after you because my name, my reputation matters. So when you think about names, lawsuits have been fought over names. I mean, big lawsuits have come because of names. People feel that there is an infringement on the name. A name is being used badly or poorly. It's serious stuff. Somebody else had a follow-up comment, I think, in the middle. Bonnie.
The business spends a lot of money on various programs to send their employees to about remembering names.
Yes. Yeah. Company name.
Yeah, and people that we deal with, it's very important to remember people's names,
mm-hmm.
to recognize them.
Here is another example of what we talked about in previous classes. In the secular world, people get it. As we said last week, they don't have typically any problem when it comes to inference, example, and commands in the secular world. For example, the doctor says, if you don't take this pill every day, faithfully for the rest of your life, you're going to die. You're going to be dead within 2 days. Well, people infer something from that, don't they? If I don't take that pill, I'm going to die. The doctor's giving you the information and you're pulling from that. He's implying something. Hey, this needs to be done. I'm going to die. And people have no problem drawing those conclusions. And Bonnie made this point as well. When you start talking about the Bible and spiritual things, the eyes just start to glaze over and they act as if, oh boy, where'd you come up with that? That's just way out there. from La La Land. Well, no, it's not. You use these principles every single day. Now you just need to get into the habit of using them in the religious realm, just as you do on a regular basis in the spiritual realm. And here's one of those things that we can point out when it comes to the name. Names matter to you. You go up and you start calling the child by the wrong name. Child's probably going to correct you. You know, even by the age of 3 or 4 or 5, the child says, "That's not my name. This is my name." Well, the same thing is true when it comes to the church. Continuing, he says, although some would say that names are unimportant, we can easily see that that's not true. Then, as what Ray had hinted at earlier, can you imagine a husband thinking it's unimportant that his wife would wear another's name? The Lord is just as vitally concerned with the titles of his church and his people. And then a little more. He goes on to say the names by which the body of Christ are called are descriptive rather than proper names. What's he mean by that? The names are descriptive rather than proper.
Describing
John the Baptist.
Okay.
That's what he does. That's necessarily his
yes.
full name.
Yes, exactly. And then Bonnie, yours.
What did he say?
John the Baptist. That's a description of who he is. He's John the Baptizer. He's John. Okay, there's another one. Simon the Sorcerer. He's the fellow that's involved with that sorcery. When we say Church of Christ, what do we mean? Or you can answer the question in reverse. What do we not mean?
It is Christ's church.
All right. It's a descriptive name. It's telling us what it is. It is the church which belongs to Christ. If we say Church of God, what are we saying? It's the church that belongs to God. Church of the firstborn. Well, firstborn is a reference to Christ. So it is the church that belongs to the firstborn, or it's the church that belongs to Christ. Sometimes, though, I think people, when they see the name in a sign, they see that as a proper name. For example, this is the Church of God. Well, they don't necessarily understand that as a description, but they understand that as, you know, it's like Stan Palmer, John Palmer, you know, this is the name. Does the Church of the New Testament have an official name? No. But it is described in various ways. And I gave some of those descriptions. For example, it would be the household of God. That would be another description of it. So there is no special name. Could we worship in a building that said the Church of God? Could we worship in a building that said the Church of the Firstborn? The household of God? Churches of Christ? A lot of different descriptions that we could use. And that's what we're out to. There's, somebody says, well, you know, the name over the door, is that important? No. I mean, we could worship in a grass hut with no name on it. But you get back to what are you doing and who are you trying to honor. So descriptions, not proper names, is what we're dealing with. And I think that's a lot of the reason why when you see that word church, it's not capitalized as far as the first C. They're trying to emphasize this is not a proper name, this is a description. This is who we are. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Okay, second sentence in the third paragraph. We discover several such expressions that are applied to the primitive body. The most common is the church. An expression, could we have that one on a sign? This is the church. Yeah, I mean, that's what we are. We're going to be the body of Christ. He says the most common is the church, an expression derived from the Greek word ekklesia. That's not here, but that's what it is. And that means the called out, the assembly, literally. The church in the New Testament sense is composed of those who've been called out of the world of sin to become the people of God. And the word church is used in a variety of ways. First way, of course, is not going to be too objectionable to most people. The church, there is the universal sense of the saved. You know, it's the church. It's all God's people, all the redeemed, all the people that are going to go to heaven wherever they are in the world. And then you have the church in a localized sense. We say, well, the church is not going to meet today. I think I've said this a couple times before, but if you look carefully at our sign, anybody know offhand what it says? It doesn't say the Church of Christ.
Meets here.
Yeah. This is, and I didn't actually look on the way in this morning, but it says something like, this is the meeting place for the Goshen Church of Christ. You know, the church is not the building. We're the church. And we happen to meet in a building. But a lot of people get that mixed up, or they just have never really thought about that. So we do have the universal sense, the congregational sense, and then we would also find the sense in which, you know, we're the church, we've come together to worship. That sense, you see that, remember in Matthew 18? Jesus said, if you've got a problem with somebody, go work it out. You've got some witnesses, and If that doesn't get worked out, then the third step, tell it to the church. Well, not the building, but you're telling it to the assembly, the people who have come together for a purpose like worship. Okay, anything that you want to add or ask before you look at the last section? Ray, it'll take you a second. Stan?
Well, if this was the church, and a lot of people do refer to it that way, when we assemble in the barn, do we become the barn?
Yeah. Yeah. We're the church.
I didn't hear what. Do we, when we're assembling in the barn, do we what?
Become the barn.
Oh.
The church is the called out. We could be the called out in the building. We could be the called out in the barn. We could be the called out in the cow pasture. Once again, I think that's helpful for people to remember that it is descriptive of that assembly where that wherever that, that group is meeting.
The church is the people, not the building.
Yes.
The barn is one of them.
Okay.
We don't have a name on there.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we meet. We're still the church, and we're not a different church from a meeting in here. But a lot of people, I mean, that's just a new thought, Doug.
But it's interesting how many of us will say, "Are you going to go to church today?"
Yeah, we because of
use the term our own selves.
Yeah, we do, and I try to really avoid that. But I suspect there are times where I also fail, and it's just become so pervasive in our culture. To use the word church in that way. Somebody says, you can go to the church today to clean? Well, and maybe we do that in part because everybody knows what we're talking about, but it's just in a way to it's a way to abbreviate it. But I do try to consciously substitute the word building for the word church because that's the proper thing to say. It also helps, I think, remind people that the church is not any kind of structure. But we do err on that point more often than we'd like to admit.
Starting point when they're asking questions to explain why it's not.
Yeah. And you know, I think out of all the studies I've conducted with people, maybe not 100%, but high 90s, maybe 99% of the people, when you ask them to start thinking about what is the church, even if they have no knowledge whatsoever, they don't need to read too much or think too much before they conclude, hey, the church is not the building, the church is the people. And I've been surprised at that over the years. But until they kind of get that mental jog or the chance to think about that for just a second, they just don't make the transition. But when they're asked about it, oh, yeah, the church, that's going to be the people wherever they meet. But we do need to be careful about that. Glenda?
I hear people say, well, are you Church of Christ? Or were they Church of Christ rather than were they Christians?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we are, is Christians.
Yeah.
Christian, they don't distinguish that you're meaning a New Testament Christian versus a denominational Christian.
Right.
I think that's a teaching thing in that we don't need to err by, how was I going to say that?
Okay. Well, you do find people, for example, I think I've mentioned before that Teresa's brother, sister, sister-in-law, I believe. You know, she puts three or four religions together. I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Christian. Those kinds of things. So for her, I'm not quite sure how that all comes together, how it blends together in her mind, but she's at least professed Christianity in some form, but she's tried to mix that in with other faiths. So it gets in the minds of people sometimes really jumbled when you come to that word. And it's good to just sometimes just ask a person, what do you mean by that? You know, I've come to an understanding of what church or Christian or this word means, and how do you understand that word? And sometimes, going back to Doug's point, it takes just a minute for them to kind of put the pieces together. But if people just allow that to pass every time, they just continue in that state of ignorance.
I'm going to mention sometimes when you're going to the papers in the hospitals, they ask you what your faith is.
Mm-hmm.
They give you some choices, whether it's Christian or
right.
Jewish or Muslim, and you have to decide whether you want to put down there that you're a Christian or if you want to put down New Testament Christian, because that's not one of the choices.
No, it's not. It's not. And you're old enough to have probably been asked when you're in the service, you're going to the first chapel service, are you a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew? I was asked that question. I don't know how things are now. Like I say, for both of us, I'm pretty sure that we had that experience. Stan, too, he remembers that. And you're on that day, you're a Catholic, you're a Protestant, or a Jew. You know, you don't have any choice for atheism or anything else. I mean, it's pick one of the three, and I think most people would, from our side of the fence, have picked Christian, and then, you know, you go to what would typically be a basic Protestant service.
When I was in high school, I was elected to go to Girls' State. I don't know if anybody knows what that is anymore, but when I got there, it was the same thing. You got to choose, and I didn't want to say Protestant, so I put down Christian. And so I was assigned to the Christian church.
Oh, well, that's probably about as close as you were going to get. So, Jenny?
Just a little side thought. When I was in the congregation I worked with in Romania, when they first went there back at the beginning of 1990, they were not allowed to have the word church in their title, in their organization. So they had to come up with a name, and so they were the Way of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how many years went by before they were allowed to actually put Church of Christ.
So, but there's another description that you see in the Bible. It's the way. And you not only got, and you know, that's an example. And that's why I say when you go through the book of Acts, it's helpful to go back and look at those things again because you have Bible authority for using that. And I think even by inference. Remember Jesus said, John 14, I am the way. Well, okay, if he's the way, then if we call ourselves members of the way, I mean, all right, you know, we're using a good description there, but it's not going to be that proper name. Okay. I think Doug was first. Bonnie will take you second, to be fair.
You could just put out the call out.
Sure. Now, they might think that's really strange, and you might get a visit or two from the government officials thinking, who are you? You know, you're some kind of revolutionary group, but that would certainly fit as far as what we find in the scriptures.
My sister-in-law says that she's a God-fearing believer. Mm-hmm.
Well, people have a lot of ideas. But again, it goes back to, can you support that from the Bible? Is that what we find the scriptures teaching? If it's not, then we need to go back biblically and look at that and find out why you have chosen not to follow God's word.
When I was working with my mom and dad trying to get them to see the difference, my mom said, well, whether you want to accept it or not, you are a Protestant, Bonnie. You can't just Church of Christ. You are a Protestant. I said, well, Mom, if that's what you want to think, but that is not, I am not a Protestant.
Yeah, well, and they've tried to do that. You know, for example, Catholicism has done that. You know, we've got you for a while, you're Catholic for life. Well, that might be your version of it, but that's not what I have made as far as my spiritual choice. I've made a different determination, but the religious world, and you know, there again you get back to the idea of names. You know, the world says, hey, this is important, and this is what you are, this is what you'll always be. So it is significant. Okay, he mentions towards the bottom of the page, Acts chapter 20, the elders were told to take heed to themselves to feed the church of God, which Christ had purchased with his own blood. Then makes this point, since Jesus purchased the church with his blood, God evidently refers here to God, the Son, or Jesus Christ. The word God is a term of deity and applies to the Son as well as the Father. Church of God is used several times in the scriptures, page 2. We also have designations such as the churches of Christ, Romans 16, verse 16, the plural being used because he was writing to a number of different congregations. The church belongs to Christ, we further know, since he declared, and upon this rock I will build my church, Matthew 16, verse 18, and the church is his body. See that several times. Colossians 1 deals with that, Colossians 1, 18, I believe, Ephesians 1, 22 and 23, the church is Christ's body. And then Paul said to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 12:27, now ye are the body of Christ and members in particular. Ephesians 5:22 and 23, Paul uses the analogy of marriage there. You've got the husband, he's the head of the wife, just as Christ is the head of his church. Husband is married to the wife. Christ is, figuratively speaking, if you will, married to the church. So the church should wear the name of the husband, the groom, just as a wife should wear the name of her husband. Finally, the glory and the honor belongs to the Son of God, not a religious teacher or reformer, regardless of how great he may be. If you go back and you look at some people like Luther and some other religious leaders, they just came out and said, do not call yourself a follower of me. Do not call, Lutherans or, Methodists, because we've got a certain method, those kinds of things. Do not do that. So the fellows that were influential in turning some people to certain beliefs, that was a big thing among them. But, you know, people, It's kind of like a snowball. Once something starts, it's very, very difficult to stop. And for whatever reason, maybe they just had great respect for those men. Maybe they wanted to distinguish themselves from other groups, but they didn't listen very well to those guys, and that resulted in some of the distinctions that we see today. Other phrases designating the church would be the church of the firstborn, Hebrews 12, verse 23, or the kingdom, sometimes Hebrews 12, verse 28, the way, kingdom and way have already been mentioned, and certainly the household of faith. Now, some of those descriptions may not be as helpful to others. For example, if you see a sign, well, at least maybe you wouldn't think the way I would in this, but you see a sign that says the household of faith, and then you see the church building by the sign. What will go through your mind? This is the household of faith.
I wouldn't think that it was the building I would want to go to worship at.
It just sounds a little squirrely, doesn't it? I mean, for our culture, it just seems to me a little odd. So there again, you may have to change things around a little bit. But we've got different descriptions, and as I say, there's no proper name for the church. So you've got some variation there, but in each instance, you always come back to honoring Christ. So as Jenny said, you may have a cultural situation. I've known of some other missionaries in countries that were not able to use a certain designation. So the Bible's flexible enough, if you will, on that point, where we've got some alternatives. But you still don't go so far that you're outside the divine parameters that have been set up.
As we've been talking about this, I had to think of something that I've known since I was a kid. I think most people know this. This is the church. This is a steeple. Well, this is a building. This is where it's not the church. We don't put a steeple there. There's the people.
Mm-hmm.
So just that little thing you learn as a kid, this is the church. Well, that's what it says. That's a building, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a steeple, and that's a different matter altogether. So right there, the Lord's church didn't establish that little...
No, it didn't.
I'm guessing.
No, yeah. Because when you designate the church as a building... I mean, they got part of it right when they said this is the people, but as far as this is the church symbolizing the building, they missed it on that part. It's a cute saying, and that's probably one of the things that has, over the years, influenced people to that kind of thinking. But yeah, not the best teaching tool. Some terms applied to the disciples. You have multiple descriptions for Christians. Sometimes they're referred to as disciples, called Christians first at Antioch. When we think about a disciple, what is that? A disciple is a follower, you know, learners. When it comes to the way of Christ, the term Christian became the name that was worn by God's people, who, from what we can tell, indicated that a new name was going to be given. Anybody remember? Prophet Isaiah, wasn't it? Yeah, Isaiah 62:2, I believe, is an Old Testament reference there. A new name was going to be given, and we believe that new name is Christian, Acts 11:26. As a new name indicates, Christ, and then the ending, I-A-N, a Christian is a disciple, a follower of Christ. Not mentioned too many times in the Bible, but one of the places where we do find it is 1 Peter 4:16. Peter said, if any man suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. We do not read in the Bible, about Paulites or Peterites, those kinds of things. The Corinthians did seem to have some interest in that when you look at 1 Corinthians 1. You know, I follow Paul, I follow Cephas, I follow Apollos, and so forth. But Paul comes along, first chapter, and says, that's not right. You know, follow Christ, and he's the one to be honored. Disciples, we also find that they are sometimes referred to as saints. They, of course, would be living instead of the denominational idea that they are dead people. Saint means a holy one. All Christians are saints. The idea of canonizing people after they're dead and saying, well, okay, he did some miracles or this, that, the other thing, again, not necessary and not authorized. Other descriptions would be brethren, Colossians 1:2, priests, 1 Peter 2:5-9, and heirs. When we think about the church, as Jesus set it up, it is to be a united body. Paul mentions 7:1, some things that we should be united on in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 3 through 6. He says there's one body, not many. There's one spirit, and that spirit now works through the word. That's how we are brought together. We have one hope. There is one Lord. There's only one faith. There's only one baptism, and only one God and Father of all. But in our world, we often find, well, you have multiple hopes. There are multiple baptisms. Multiple faiths, multiple callings, and so forth, but the Bible says that simply is not true. Jesus wanted the disciples to be one in his day, John 17, and that is true throughout the Christian era as well, but a lot of people, they say, well, division is good, that way you can just join the church of your choice. That's not right. Even the Old Testament, Psalm 133, verse 1 said, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Our world has tried unity and diversity and all kinds of crazy stuff, but that is not true unity. already mentioned 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 10 through 13, looking at that last page. So, you know, if it was wrong to follow Paul, trying to follow other men, make them our religious leader, is also wrong. Final paragraph, and then we'll deal with their questions. Likewise, unknown in the primitive church were the denominational organizations and creeds, which serve to perpetuate division today. We touched on that earlier. The early Christians maintained unity because they were content to accept only those teachings which have been revealed to us in the New Testament. May we also strive to do the same thing. Okay, let's fill in the blanks. The church applied to, the term applied to the church in the passages. 1 Corinthians 11:22, it is the church of God. Romans 16:16, the church of Christ, or churches of Christ, but that's what we're dealing with, singular and plural there. Acts 20, verse 28, church of, okay. Colossians 1:18, the body. 1 Timothy 3:15, it is the house of God. Our questions, Acts 11:26, where were the first disciples called Christians? Antioch. Whom did Paul almost persuade to be a Christian? Acts 26:28. Agrippa. Ephesians 1, verse 1, what did Paul call the Christians in Ephesus to whom he addressed this letter? You are saints. And then Romans 8:17, with whom does Paul say Christians are joint heirs? Christ. If we suffer with him, we're also going to reign with him. For whom does John say Christians ought to lay down their lives? The brethren. Is that a one-time act or is that a continuous thing? Anybody remember? Very good. Picked that up from 1 John way back when, so excellent that you remembered that. Read 1 Corinthians 1, 10-17, and then based on that, is it true or false? Paul was glad. He was happy that some at Corinth were saying they were of Paul. That's simply not true. It's false. Crispus was the only one personally baptized by Paul. Also false. Those of the household of Chloe had told Paul that there were contentions at Corinth. That is true. Some were following Apollos. True. Others too, but he specifically mentioned. Paul entreated them to be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. That God's will for today? It is. All right, from John 17, we have Jesus' prayer regarding unity. So, which verse do we find the following statements in? Sanctify them through thy truth. I think you got the wrong word there. Through, try truth, should be thy truth. Thy word is truth. 17. That they all may be one as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they also may be one of us, or in us. 21. And number 3, I finished the work which thou gavest me to do. 4. Holy Father, keep them through thy name, thine own name, those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one even as we are. 11. And then, they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Okay. And then, I and them, thou and me, that they may be perfect in one, and that the world may know that thou sent me. 23. Father, the hour is come, glorify the Son, that thy Son also may glorify thee. 1. I pray that thou shouldest take them, not take them out of the world, but thou should keepest them from evil. 15. And then the glory which thou gavest me have given them, that they may be one even as we are. 22. And then now they have known that all things whatsoever thou hast given me are of thee. Which one? I had 7. Okay.